Since that time, I guess I've been to close to 800 different missionary Baptist churches and a lot of different seminaries, colleges, universities. And the whole time that I've been presenting it, I've always shown how peace would come, so forth and so on. But one of the things I never did cover until Ariel Sharon came into office was exactly how the peace would come in. And to be perfectly honest, it bothered me a lot. Retiring from the National Security Agency in 1971, and the time I spent in there, has really been invaluable to me to understand Scripture. If I hadn't been in the agency, there's no way under heaven I could have ever come to understand how it would be brought. You see, in the agency, I worked with a lot of Islamic nations. We worked together. Some of the people that were from those nations I went to school with. Some of them I taught. Some of them I sat in class with. From most of the Arab nations. At the same time, we had electronic surveillance operating out of the agency that picked up all the different types of chatter that came out of these countries. And we learned all about what their war contingency plans were, where their war contingency evacuation areas were, from the chatter and also from spy satellites that were launched out of Vandenberg Air Force Base. Well, while I was engaged in this, my main object was to take the information and assimilate it into reports by taking different reports from different agencies and putting it together to come to certain conclusions. And because I was a meteorologist and all the sections and compartments in the agency and the CIA had use for meteorology, I got a pretty wide spectrum of different things that were being considered in Arabic countries as well as in Israel. But the one thing that I never could understand because of all this was how peace would ever come to the Middle East. You see, I used to go out and eat with Syrian officers, and when they'd be around some, they'd see some Egyptian officers, they'd just about get in a fist fight, just in a cafe, just seeing each other. So I knew they hated each other. But as I went through time, I discovered what an intense hate, inbred hate, that the Arabs have for Israel. And this is something that is inbred from childhood. What you've always had in the Middle East are two different sides against each other. Over here you have the descendants of the six sons of Keturah. And Abraham sired these sons by her after Sarah died. And when they got old enough, instead of giving them inheritance, he gave them a little inheritance and sent them away to the east. Their descendants have never forgotten that. And then the other area of on this side with the six sons of Keturah are the descendants of Ishmael, who had 12 sons. And they have constantly been jealous of Israel because they got the inheritance of the land. And in addition to that, there were Moab and Ammon, the two illegitimate sons of Lot over here on this side, which basically make up what we call Jordan today. Over here, you had Israel. The man Jacob renamed Israel, who had 12 sons, and there's Israel. And they hate Israel. They despise Israel. I mean, they would like to take every Israeli. You say, well, this can't be true of all of them. It's true of most of them. Yeah, they keep talking about these moderate Arabs. I never met any of them. They'd like to hang every Jew upside down by his feet, slit his throat, and slowly watch him bleed to death. That's what they'd like. So the thing I could not understand, knowing this, how can you ever bring in peace? Well, first of all, I knew it had to be a false peace. I know there could never, 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 under any circumstances, be a genuine peace between this side over here, the Islamic side, Arabic side, and the descendants of Jacob, the man Israel. There could never be true peace, so I knew it had to be a false peace, so that wasn't any problem. But I didn't see how even a false peace could be brought in, because they cannot negotiate with each other. They hate each other so much. And the Arabs want everything. Now, the Jews are willing to give them quite a bit, but the Arabs want it all. And the Arabic aim has always been not to negotiate that they ever thought they could have a real peace, but to drive Israel into the sea. I don't know if you remember it, but for those of you that watch the website that we have, We keep an archive of all of our prophecy updates. I'll tell you something that's amazed me, and if it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, I apologize. I'm absolutely amazed at how precise and deadly accurate everything we have put out for 2 years has been. I mean, it has been precise and deadly accurate. Now, I'm a very human person, and I expect to make mistakes in predicting things. I haven't made a single mistake. And it's been based on prophecy on the Bible, and it's been based on what I know about the Arabs and Israelis. And sure, I'm going to make some mistakes sooner or later, but I haven't made one yet. And you can go back and look at prophecy update number one, and you can go all the way through to the one that last one we have on there, prophecy update 72, and all of them in between. You will not find one single statement in any of those that has not panned out. That's remarkable. You say, well, it sounds like you're patting yourself on the back. No, I'm not. I'm amazed. But everything I put on there has been based on the Bible and what I know about the Arabs. I never could figure out how there could ever be even a false peace. So the very first prophecy update we ever issued, we still have it in our archives, you can go back and read it. The very first prophecy update we ever issued was based on what you see on this screen. When Ariel Sharon took office, he said, I can make peace. And I read the article. The old boy really believed he could do it. Good heavens. I have great admiration for this man. Tremendous respect. Him and Benjamin Netanyahu both. But I knew one thing right quick. There's no way that dude can ever make peace except by force. So the very first prophecy update we ever put up, you can read it, 2 years ago. And I clearly stated, it may well be that the peace that's going to come to Israel is a forced peace. And then from there on out, for 2 years, I've talked about that forced peace till I guess it's coming out people's ears. But that's the only kind of a peace that man could ever bring in. It was something I hadn't considered. In all these years, I've wondered how it would be brought. The only way you're ever going to have a peace in Israel is a forced peace. You have to force the Palestinians into it. It has to be based on force rather than open free will negotiations. And so I began to remember early this year about a plan that was introduced when I was in the security agency, National Security Agency in Washington, D.C. in 1968. It was an Israeli plan introduced by Yigal Alon, who was the defense minister at that time. But it was never put into effect. And his idea and plan was to completely surround Israel with a buffer zone. And to make that buffer zone so airtight, security-wise, that the terrorists would be contained inside it. And the checkpoints and the ditches and the fence and all the economists that went with it and the surveillance would be so tight that the terrorists couldn't get out. So I said, okay, and I put that in, the updates. It's all in there. This was way back. And I said, I believe Israel's going to build a buffer zone, and I believe they're going to build it so high and make it so wide, and I predicted it would be 2 to 10 miles wide. And this was all based on something that I got in the agency in 1968. Lo and behold, if they aren't doing it. And I got so specific on it that on Prophecy Update 65A, I issued earlier this year, I told people exactly 7 steps that Israel would carry out. And I mean, I was precise on all of them. And believe it or not, on March 29th, they started. And believe it or not, we're down to steps 5, 6, and 7 right now. Israel is going to force the peace on the Palestinians. And that's how it's going to come in. It'll be a false peace, but nevertheless, it'll be a peace. Now, the reason that I knew it had to be a forced peace is because I grew up a large part of my life as a young man in my 20s in some of these Arab countries overseas. And I'll never forget how many times I've had my shin kicked by these kids. These kids, these Arabic kids from their youth, are trained to hate Israelis. They're trained to grow up to be militiamen. And their whole goal in life, from both a militant and a religious standpoint, is to kill Israelis and get them out of the country. That's why I knew you had to have a false peace. But I still couldn't understand how you could ever even get them to the negotiating table. Well, I don't think you have to. I think they're going to put a forced peace on. and there's not very much we can do about it. Furthermore, I think if they continue the pressure long enough, the Palestinians in sheer desperation are going to come. These are Palestinian Boy Scouts. Take a look at this bunch. They are as vicious as their fathers and their fathers before them. Boy Scouts. They're vicious. They're hateful. They despise Israelis and pay no attention to the Boy Scout code. And that's the way they all are. I keep listening to these people on television talk about these moderate Arabs. There may be a few out in Tucumcari, New Mexico, and Pocatello, Idaho, and Sugar Falls, Montana, but I haven't run into very many. A moderate Islamic is somebody that would probably shoot you directly between the eyes so you wouldn't suffer. Now, I'm sorry. You may accuse me of racial prejudice, but I lived with these people. And from the cradle, they're taught that way. I don't. You say, well, don't you feel sorry for them? Yes, I do feel sorry for them. But I have to deal with the way things are, not the way I wish they are. And quite frankly, it's not just the boys. It's the girls. How many women do you know that will blow themselves up? There is no sex deviant on this. And I'm telling you, it's bad. So when Ariel Sharon came in, this was the Jerusalem report. No end in sight. Last year, I knew what he'd do. I knew he'd force a peace on them. And I felt very confident that he would take the old Yigal-Alon plan, revise it, and develop a system whereby he would go in and do exactly what he's done. In this thing that I put out, I said, step one, go into the areas, the larger cities, kill as many, arrest, kill, scatter the terrorists. Pull out, start building a ring around the city. I did this long before any of this ever happened. Then this was the plan. This was what the revised plan was. Then after you have your intelligence inside the area that you've pulled back out of, get your intelligence to report to you where the terrorists have regrouped, go back in, kill, arrest, scatter. Just keep doing this over and over and over and over and over and over. And then start building a fence, a buffer zone around it. I bow before God and stand before man and tell you that is precisely what has been happening and what is happening right now. And there's no end in sight for the Jewish people. Why did I show you that one? Because I knew how desperate they were. And they are desperate. And they've learned you cannot trust Yasser Arafat. And you cannot trust the Palestinians. You cannot trust them because the terrorist groups, even if you got in and signed a negotiated peace treaty, they would still be blowing the devil out of you. So they're going to bring in their own peace. It's a forced peace. And that's what the buffer zone is all about. And when they get them all bottled up in there, they'll have a form of peace. Now, I've kept up with these terrorist groups from the time I left the agency. We didn't have much on Al-Qaeda when I was in the agency. That was one that arose after I left the agency. But Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, Fatah, and all these others, we knew quite well about them. We knew who was supporting them. We watched them grow. We knew where they were coming from. Now, I'm going to put this into practical terms. What you see on this screen, the red areas, are either areas that under the Oslo Agreement in 1993 between the Palestinians and the Israelis, they either gave this back to the Palestinians and said, okay, this is yours. If it's dark, dark wine color, then that's autonomous. It means the Palestinians have complete control of it. If it's a light kind of wine color, then the Palestinians have control of it, most of the control, but it's not completely autonomous. If it's not colored any color, this is the green line. It's not green on this chart, but that's what they all call it. This is the green line. The West Bank comes right around in here like this. That's the green line. This is the Gaza Strip. The Palestinians and all the Islamic countries, the whole Arab League, they want all the West Bank. They want all the Gaza Strip. No compromise. All the West Bank. All the Gaza Strip. There's a problem. You see all those little green specks in there? Those are Israeli settlements. And they have been putting those things in there like mad. Every one of them has. There are little red areas on this, or wine-colored areas. The little red dots, or red areas, are Palestinian settlements. This forced peace is going to cause something to happen. The West Bank is this area inside the green line. It's red on this chart. It goes all the way around here. And down here you have the Gaza Strip. Now Israel, because the Gaza Strip is a very small area, they completely built a buffer zone all the way around it. So far there have been 22 terrorist attacks, 22 terrorist bombings since the Intifada began 21 months ago. Not one single terrorist bomber has come out of the Gaza Strip. They maintain a very tight composure around it. Everybody's thoroughly checked in and out. Will a terrorist ever come out of there with a bomb? Yeah, I think he will. I think now that Israel has been so protective about it, they probably get one out of there before long. They'll kill themselves trying to do it. But all 22 of them have come from out of that West Bank. So what the Israelis had originally planned to do, they said they originally planned it, but they didn't, was to build right along this green line all the way around. Now that's what they said. But they no more intended to do that than Moody's goose. And I'm not saying that in a provocative or a scolding way. As far as I'm concerned, that whole thing belongs to Israel. God gave it to them. See all those little green dots in there? Israel is going to do something that's going to make the Palestinians fighting mad, but they can't do anything about it. Neither can the Arab nations. All the red areas, wine-colored areas, whether they be light or dark, the Israelis will let the Palestinians have. Here comes the green line around like this. They'll build along the green line right up here just like they're doing now. But when they get right down in here, they'll come in here like this and they'll go up this valley and they'll come in and take in these Jewish settlements. They'll take in all these Jewish settlements. Now these up in here, they'll probably abandon. They'll come in here and they'll take in all these Jewish settlements. They'll redraw the line, put their fence up in here. They'll come in here and catch these. They'll come in here and catch these. And they'll come across and they'll catch these. They're going to take about 30% of the West Bank inside that green line and keep their settlements. On this side, the line will probably come right against the foothills of the Samarian Mountains all the way down to here. Now, here in Jerusalem, you know what the Palestinians want? All of it. Every bit of it. 100% of it. They're not going to get 100% of it. They'll get the eastern part of it, Silloway, but they're going to build a fence. They're already building it down through there. Now, this is an update that I just made that will probably be put out tonight. Terrorists help Israel make a decision. June 19, 2002. We put these out quite frequently. We have regular ones that go out every Friday, and they go out all over the world. They go out on the Internet. We have hits from every country in the world. June 19, 2002. The two Jerusalem bombings by Hamas and the Al-Aqsa Brigade today have opened the door for Israel to make and justify a decision which will affect how much of the West Bank inside the Green Line is taken over by Israel as it builds the buffer zone around it. I've known for a long time they build a buffer zone. I've known for a long time they dip in there and take back most of their settlements. But now they have justification for doing it because of these two attacks that happened today. In Prophecy Update number 65C, I presented a diagram showing how much of the West Bank I believed would eventually be taken over by Israel. What I showed in the diagram would allow Israel to put up to 70% of the existing settlements inside the Green Line. The Islamic nations want all the land inside the Green Line to be given to the Palestinians. The diagram I presented was based on Israel keeping about 30% of the West Bank for itself, upon which the settlements would exist. It would appear that the 20 suicide bombings, there have been 22 now, during the past 21 months have given Israel a justification to claim this land as a legal payment to the living for the horror inflicted on its civilian population by terrorists. Watch Israel come out with this. They will claim they have a right to this land because of the terrorist activity, and it's owed to them by the Palestinians. And what's more, I agree wholeheartedly. The latest terrorist attack in Jerusalem has increased the difficulty for our president to present a peace plan for the Middle East that Israel will accept. There are several fundamental factors that I doubt will change concerning their taking the land. Now, when I'm talking about taking the land, they're going to take it. And I believe there are certain fundamental things you can count on that won't change. Number one, the Israelis know that the Islamic countries lying outside their borders are not able to stop them from taking the land. There's no way under heaven they can do it, and so Israel will take it. Whether they take it or not, the Islamic Jihad, Al-Aqsa Brigade, and Hamas are going to continue to attempt to carry out their bombings until they are called off by the Islamic countries financing them. That's why they're going to do it. Yasser Arafat has no more control over the Al-Aqsa Brigade, Hamas, or the Islamic Jihad than Moody's Goose. He hasn't had any control over Hamas or the Al-Aqsa Brigade or the Islamic Jihad for a long time. He never had it over Hamas, and he never had it over the Islamic Jihad. He used to have it over the Al-Aqsa Brigade. But now Yasser Arafat can't even control his own Fatah group. Even though the U.S. will object to their taking the land, they will not drop their support for Israel. Time is on Israel's side, and the longer they hold it, the more likely they are to be able to keep it. The United Nations may scream bloody murder, but as long as the U.S. is a part of it, United Nations troops will not be sent in without the approval of the U.S. It has been remarkable to me to watch the progress toward a false peace by a process I first presented as a genuine forced peace possibility in Prophecy Update Number 1 in 2001. My time as an analyst in the National Security Agency has been invaluable to me in predicting what Israel will do based on the prophecies of the Bible. Prophecy Update Number 65D, issued April 10, 2002, I showed that the Israelis were employing a revised version of the old Yigal Alon plan of 1968, which was introduced before I retired from the United States Air Force National Security Agency branch in 1971. This plan was never employed until March 29, 2002, when Ariel Sharon launched it. The plan was and is to build a security buffer zone around the entire West Bank, as I outlined from memory in Prophecy Update Number 65D. In Prophecy Update Number 65A, I outlined 7 specific steps that would be followed as they followed the plan to its ultimate conclusion, which was the creation of a security buffer zone around the West Bank. They are now continuously forming steps 5 and 6 while building the buffer zone of step 7. You may view 65D, 65A, 62D, 65A, and 65D along with all updates from 2001, 2002 in our prophecy archives on the Dardanelle web pages at www.tribulationperiod.com. Now, I'm not showing you that to say, look how smart I am, or look how well I can predict. I'm 70 years old. I'm past all that childish stuff. But I'm showing you that because this is it. This is finally it. And things are coming to a point in the Middle East where there's going to be a false peace. One of two things will happen. Israel will either completely block them in, and Israel will say, we have peace and safety. And the scripture says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, and when they shall say peace and safety, then, boom, sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, the tribulation period, and they shall not escape, and Israel alone. So these things now are headed toward that. How long is it going to take? Well, I honestly believe, and believe me, I'm taking an awful chance on this, I honestly believe by the end of this year, before 2003 dawns, Israel will be saying, we finally have peace and safety. Do I think there'll be any negotiations? That's a hard question, and I'm not sure. One thing I am sure of, it'll be a false peace. The other thing I'm sure of is, if there are negotiations, it will only be because the Israelis, by building the fence, have forced the Palestinians to negotiate so they could get a little more land. The Palestinians didn't take the deal that Ehud Barak offered them at Camp David. He offered them 98% of the West Bank. 98%. And they wouldn't take it. He offered them half of Jerusalem, and they wouldn't take it. Now they're going to be lucky if they get 70% of the West Bank and Silowe in eastern Jerusalem. They're going to be lucky if they get that. But Israel, unless the Palestinians come to the negotiating table, they're going to give them just what they think they ought to have, and no more, no less. Well, the Arab countries aren't fools. If a little old insignificant nobody like me in 1968 in the National Security Agency knew about the Yigal-Levon plan, you better believe they did. You better believe President Bush knew about it, because the agency I came out of posts the president on everything. And you better believe what I've been putting on that internet is not something that they don't know about. They know all about it, and they know what's happening. And President Bush has been dragging his feet deliberately to give Israel more time in building this wall, because this wall is going to force them to negotiate. You see, if they don't negotiate soon, they're not going to get very much of that West Bank back, and they know it. Also, the Arab countries. What are they concerned about? You think they like the Palestinians? They look upon the Palestinians about like when they went to Nathanael and told him to come to Jesus, and Jesus was from Nazareth. He said, "Can any good thing come out of Nazareth?" Nazareth was looked upon as a dirty little filthy town that nobody had any respect for. The rest of the Arab nations looked down upon the Palestinians as dogs. And millions of them are scattered throughout their countries in refugee camps. They hate them. They want to get rid of them. They want to get them back in Israel. You think there's love between those people? Man, they have nothing but hate. I lived among them. You think I wasn't scared staying in Medina's at night? Man, I was. They'll slit your throat for nothing. Well, what's going to happen? National interest. Everything's based on national interest. We want Arab oil. You think Saudi Arabia let us have those bases over there because they're good, moderate Arabs? Do you know most of the terrorists have come from Saudi Arabia? You think they're nice guys in the Arab world? They're monsters. And the only reason they let us have those bases over there is because if they didn't, Saddam Hussein was going to come down and take all their oil wells. We didn't want Saddam Hussein to have those oil wells, and Saudi didn't want to lose the revenue for them, so they gave us the bases. Nothing is ever done on this planet anymore except in national interest. And it's our national interest to help Israel. With Israel, it's a little bit more than national interest, because we have a moral thing about them that God put in our hearts. And it's real, and it's genuine, and it's not just based on national interest. If we had strictly done this by national interest, we would have tried to help the Arabs, wipe them out, so we could have full access to the oil. So I'm not trying to say it's all cruelty and hatred. But the Islamic people are quite different from the people of the book, the Bible. They're quite different from the Israelis. I have good friends among the Israelis. I tried to develop a friendship with the Arabic people, but you can't develop a friendship with them. I tried very hard to develop friendship. They don't want friendship, because I'm a dog. I'm a heathen. I'm an infidel. You say, "Well, Brother McElmurray, what about the liberal ones? They think I'm an infidel." Now, a lot of people don't know zip about the Middle East, and I've listened to a lot of these bleeding hearts that made all sorts of claims about what was going to happen over there. And we needed to do this, and we needed to do that. We need to let Israel do what she has to do, and we need to help her, and we need to let Israel know we're behind her, and let her solve her own problem, and I guarantee you she'll do a whole lot better job than we will. Well, the latter days. I want to make sure you get your money's worth. We've been talking about the latter days, and on Wednesday night we've been presenting a series of messages called The Latter Days, where I just went through Scripture and picked out different ones wherever that expression appeared. In Hosea 3, 4, and 5, we're told, "For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, without a prince, without a sacrifice, without an image, and without an ephod, without teraphim." Those were different things that were associated with the way they went about it, their normal everyday worship. He said, for a long time, you're not going to have a king, a prince, or anything on your doorpost here in Israel, or anything in condiments in your houses, because you're not going to be in Israel. Then he says, afterwards shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God, and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. Well, we're headed toward the latter days. I think we're in the latter days, and I think we're going to see a lot of prophecy fulfilled in the next 6 years, more than we can possibly realize. When did this thing happen where they were suddenly without a king, without a prince, without a sacrifice, without an image? In Luke 21:24, a prophecy of Jesus that was fulfilled in A.D. 70, he uttered it in A.D. 30. 40 years later, here's what happened. Luke 21:24, and they shall fall by the edge of the sword, shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So the first part of this prophecy tells you when this period is going to start, where they won't have a king, a prince, or any of the normal things that they associate with being in the city of Jerusalem and worshiping there. He tells you that they're going to be taken captive into all nations. Titus overran the city with a Roman legion in AD 70, carried them into captivity, and they were carried all over the world. And what he didn't finish, Hadrian finished in 132 to 135 AD. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down the Gentiles, the times the Gentiles be fulfilled. The prophecy is for the city of Jerusalem. And this prophecy was fulfilled in 1967, in June, when Macedon and the Israeli troops stormed the old city of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount and took it back for the first time in almost 1,900 years. Now, in the latter days, after the Temple Mount is recovered by the Gentiles, will it again be taken, retaken by the Gentiles? Will it? It was fulfilled in 1967. In the latter days, after the Temple Mount is recovered by the Gentiles, will it again be retaken by the Gentiles? And if so, how long will they hold it? It will be taken again. In Revelation 11:2, he shifts from a heavenly scene to an earthly scene right in the middle of a semicolon. But the court which was without the temple, leave out and measure it not. Then he makes a statement concerning the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. For it is given unto the Gentiles. Now, right here after this colon, this is when a whole new thought begins. And the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. That's 1,260 days, 3.5 years, times half a time, the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. So it is going to be retaken. It is going to be recaptured. Now, when's that going to happen? When will they retake it in the latter days? Revelation 12:6 tells you when they will retake it and what will happen to Israel when they conquer the city of Jerusalem. And the woman, Israel, fled into the wilderness, where she, the woman, hath a place prepared of God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. The woman is going to flee to the Negev wilderness. You say, you don't know that. Yes, I do. Because Israel's war contingency plan, which we electronically picked up by intercept, indicated that that was their war contingency evacuation area, the whole Negev, which is over one-third of the total land area of Israel. Furthermore, we watched on spy satellites out of Vandenberg Air Force Base that were launched by the hundreds, and we watched them turn it into the most heavily fortified zone on the surface of God's earth. I've shown that to you many times. I've talked to you about it many times. That's where Israel's going to flee. She'll be there for about 3.5 years. What will close out the final 1,260 days of what we call the latter days? Romans 11:25. For I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits, that blindness, spiritual blindness, has happened in part to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. The fullness of the Gentiles is when the fullness of the iniquity of this age comes to the full, just like God would not let Abraham return with Abraham's people return until the iniquity of the Amorites was to the full. The fullness of the Gentiles is when the end of this age comes and God has had enough of the Gentile immorality and Jesus Christ returns at the end of the tribulation period to end this particular age. Micah 5:3. In Micah 5:3, we're talking about this original scripture way back here we started with in Hosea. Afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God and David their king and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. So it's talking about Israel returning to the land after they're driven out. Micah 5:3. Therefore, conclusion, will he, Messiah the Prince, Jesus, give them up? For how long? Until the time that she which travaileth, the nation of Israel, hath brought forth the remnant that returned with him at the end of the tribulation period. Then the remnant of his brethren, we are his brethren, he refers to us quite frequently in the Bible as his brethren, shall return unto the children of Israel. All the saints that he has raptured out previously will return back to earth with him. This is when God returns, and every eye shall see him with all the saints he's raptured previously. Zechariah 13:9. And I will bring the third part through the fire. Only a third of Israel will survive the tribulation period, about 1.7 to 1.9 million. And I will bring the third part through the fire and will refine them as silver is refined and will try them as gold is tried. At the end of the tribulation period, this is what Israel will do. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them, and I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God. Zechariah 13:9. Well, it's getting pretty close to time, but I'll just read the rest of this. Zechariah 12:8-14. We're talking about when he returns. In that day shall the Lord defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, Zechariah 12:8-14, and he that is feeble among them in that day shall be as David, as David conquered the nations around Israel. And the house of David shall be his God, and the angel of the Lord before them in the days of old when God led them. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem, those that drove her into the Negev wilderness some 3.5 years before. And I will pour upon the house of David, the king, and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the spirit of grace and supplications, and they shall look upon me, Jesus Christ, who they pierced and rejected, and they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son. Israel will repent and accept Christ as the Messiah, realizing their forefathers actually crucified him, and that he took their sins in his own body on the tree. And shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. Christ is the firstborn. In that day there shall be a great mourning in Jerusalem, as the mourning of Hadrodrimmon in the valley of Megiddo. This was a time when the nation who loved King Josiah, the boy king, very much, he was killed there at this battle, and that's supposedly the greatest mourning that ever occurred in Israel. And this is going to be even much, much greater than that, because the whole nation will mourn because they realize all these years they have been blind about their Messiah. Verse 12, and the land shall mourn, every family apart. This is the normal way of mourning in Israel. The women over here, children, women, the women and their and the daughters over here, the men, children over here. And the land shall mourn every family apart, the family of the house of David apart. Why pick David? There are two offices in Israel that were honored tremendously. One was the office of king. The other was the office of the priest. And Jesus will be both king and priest. So the family of the house of David apart and their wives apart, the family of the house of Nathan apart. Why does it pick Nathan? Because Nathan was his youngest son. And their wives apart. The family of the house of Levi apart. Why does he pick Levi? Because Levi was the one from whom the priest came. Aaron was his son, and the priest that did the sacrifices came through Aaron, and all the Levites worked upon the temple mount. And their wives apart. They were associated with the priesthood, and their wives apart. The women, Jewish men and women, always worshiped separately. The family of Shammai, who was the youngest son of Levi, and their wives apart. So he picks the king, the kingly line, the priestly line, and they're all mourning about it. All the families that remain, every family apart and their wives apart. Zechariah 14:9. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one. This is what the Lord was talking about in Luke 1:32. He shall be great and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David. Right now, outside these walls, across this earth, there are more than 6 billion people. In October, we passed the 6 billion mark. Of those 6 billion, I doubt if 1% really has a cognizant awareness of how close this is. Most people think we're insane to believe this is close. And many of you sitting here may think it's way on down the road, but it's not. I mean, it's here. And whether you like it or not, whether you believe it or not, it's coming in. There are far too many things that have happened in Israel in the last 20 years. Far too many things that have happened with earthquakes, famines, and pestilences for this not to be coming down. One of the nice things about all this, I may live long enough to say I told you. I'm 70. I may not make it through the night. But I believe within the next 6 years, you're going to find out one way or the other on this. And I believe that everything that's happening in the Middle East right now is definitely pointing toward one single solitary thing. First, a false peace. You watch that Mideast. When you hear Israel start to say, make the statement, we finally have peace, then Katie bar the door. Because a period of time will pass after that, which they think they have peace. Whether it be forced peace or whether it be a combination of forced and negotiated together, they're going to think they have it. And it won't be too long after they think they have it that all of a sudden a vicious lightning jihad is going to be launched against them from the north. One of the nice things about being 70 years old, you know, we human beings think peculiar things. I hate to think of my body laying out there in a grave for a long time. And if it does end up out there, I feel very confident it's not going to stay out there very long. Don't you think so, Kenneth? You think I'd make a beautiful corpse? You never thought much about that, huh? You know, the one thing that's always bothered me, dying after Vietnam, I figured I was lucky to live through Vietnam. So dying's never bothered me all that much. But I tell you the one thing that's always bothered me about death. I hate to think of my children having to walk by a casket and look at their dad laying there and saying, "Didn't she do a nice job on him? Didn't they make him look nice? And he finally got his hair parted right." I don't want that. So maybe the Lord will come and I'll get raptured and they'll never have that chance. Kenneth, would you dismiss?